This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Can you believe it? Here we are, mid-April, kicking off another week. Hey, everybody. Kate Delaney coming up on this show, a conversation with a man who spent decades really figuring out number combinations for lotteries. Francis Isaac joins us from the UK. Wait till you hear his story. Really fascinating. You have to be a patient person to want to do that. I know somebody that did that with a poker book and just went through all these hands and hands and hands, and it was a book all about that, and swore that, you know, you're not going to win millions and sit there in one sitting, but that there was something to that. Also a conversation with Steve Hamilton. So fascinating to talk about his novel, and fascinating because we had a chance to catch up off the air, and of course on the air, and during the conversation you will hear that as well. And he wrote a book called A Scandal of the Particular. But he's a prosecutor, and he asked me in the interview about prosecutors, and we know so many more famous, I think, defense attorneys a lot of times than prosecutors, although maybe things have flipped in recent times. So I started thinking about what prosecutors do you know, right? Chris Darden and Marsha Clark, they constantly got airtime, obviously, during the O.J. Simpson trial. Patrick Fitzgerald brought down mob guys, convicted the four terrorist bombings, you know, the terrorists for the U.S. embassies in Africa. And Jerry Nell Kuitz, who was the prosecutor who went after Oscar Pistorius. You might remember him, an Olympic hero in South Africa, murdered his girlfriend, and he said it was just a snowball of lies. And you may have other prosecutors that you would put on your list, and I certainly have others too, but I sent him that because I thought of prosecutors that just popped right in my head. And then coming up also, in case you missed it, Nefarious opened wide this past weekend, and it's one of those horror suspense movies. It's really interesting. Sean Patrick Flannery, the lead actor, joins us to talk about the movie, and he's somebody you will remember from a lot of different movies. He's had wonderful supporting cast character roles and has made a living certainly in Hollywood. But anyway, he talks about being in Nefarious. Speaking of talking about what everybody really is talking about, and I say that this is what this show is all about. Besides, we did have a horrific weather event, the big flood in Fort Lauderdale. They're still cleaning up, but at least it's dry now at this point, but was incredibly flooded. So many cars, so many neighborhoods, just horrific stories of people escaping these floods, and the houses really destroyed. So it was about people rescuing people and all of that, and that happened. But it was a 1,000-year event, this type of flood. Crazy. So what people are talking about is this 21-year-old, and how did he have the clearance? The Air National Guardsman, Jack Teixeira, who was arrested at his mother's house and then charged with the unauthorized removal and transmission of classified national defense information. I mean, really terrible things are out there, including assessments of the situation in Ukraine, details of China's approval of the provision of lethal aid to Russia in its war in Ukraine, Egypt's secret plans to supply rockets to Russia. So the charges, of course, carry a potential maximum sentence of 15 years in prison. But I think what so many people are talking about is, how did this 21-year-old have this kind of access? And there is an answer to that question. His role was cyber transportation systems journeyman. And so he managed computers and communication system, which is a similar kind of function to doing tech support. He was like a tech support person. To do the job, he had to maintain a top secret clearance since 2021. And he could view smaller categories of highly classified material called sensitive compartmented information. And he had access to a Defense Department computer network called the Joint Worldwide Intelligence Communication System. And that's how he could have read and potentially gotten to the documents, to print the documents, because he had that same level of classification. So, you know, then you think, Pentagon, knock, knock, what's going on? How's this possible? And in that particular position, that's what happens. I mean, it turns out really potentially thousands of people with access to all this information. Certainly all the generals do, but more than a million. I mean, it's really a million people have top secret security clearance. You have to fill out this crazy form. It's called an SF-86. It asks all kinds of information, any foreign contacts, places of residence, work history. Sometimes you have to take a polygraph exam. They have to submit to investigative interviews, background checkers, question friends, family members, colleagues to get a better sense of the person. And then, of course, the government runs criminal and financial checks in a process that can take months or maybe even longer than that. What it's supposed to do is show that you're a reliable person, not that you're going to commit this crazy espionage against the federal government. I saw that great quote from Kenneth Gray, who's a retired FBI special agent. And, you know, finding someone reliable and not a security risk is what the key is. So it is about these background checks, and they're supposedly largely effective, if you think about it, in determining whether someone has been approached by foreign agents or governments, but it's not infallible. And obviously, you think about how young he was, 18, 19-year-olds who get these clearances, and the changes in their maturity, their ideology, all of that would come into play, right? And so this was about being big man on campus, sharing information, all these young dudes in this crazy secret little chat world they had. And when I say crazy, it's not crazy. It's that they were going through the pandemic and they were sharing stories and memes and all of that. And then that started to become part of it because, you know, hey, this is not a nothing burger what we're doing here. Guess what? And then, of course, a 17-year-old who didn't think it was a big deal started to put it out on the World Wide Web a little bit more, and that was it. So after Teixeira's arrest, lots of people are being questioned about the process of security and clearances and surrounding any kind of classified documents. You know, the Secretary of Defense, Lloyd Austin, issued a statement saying that he was directing the Undersecretary of Defense for intelligence and security to review intelligence access, accountability, control procedures to prevent that kind of incident from happening again. But so much damage caused by this 21-year-old, and you still say to yourself, wow, you know, Edward Snowden had a thumb drive to transfer classified material out of a secure facility. So then that hardware was forbidden. So now, what is it going to be? Is it going to be random inspections of clearance holding people in offices? Are they going to have to do that? I mean, they got to do a big study because this whole Discord group, really, what was released is shocking and damaging. So it wasn't documents that didn't matter. It was documents that mattered, including showing how we're spying on some of our allies, which I'm sure doesn't go over too well. All right, coming up next, the actor I talked about, Sean Patrick Flannery. He joins us. He's in our virtual green room right now, so to speak. That's next.
Have you heard the warning from the dead doctors don't lie guy? I'm talking about Dr. Joel Wallach. He says if you have a 4-inch medical chart, if you take prescription drugs for high cholesterol or high blood pressure, arthritis, joint pains, or other health issues, the medical profession is failing you. They're using you for an ATM machine. That's what he says. He has a free lecture revealing what pharmaceutical companies don't want you to know. There's been groundbreaking research and discoveries on how to effectively treat or eliminate over 900 different diseases naturally. And it's all in this free lecture called Deadly Recipe. You want it free? Call them toll free at 855-79-YOUNG. You ready? 855-79-YOUNG. 7'9", young. Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy, says there's no reason why we shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there.
Radio? Why should I advertise on radio? There's nothing to look at, no pictures.
Listen, you can do things on radio you couldn't possibly do on TV.
That'll be the day.
All right, watch this. Okay, people, and now when I give you the cue, I want the 700-foot mountain of whipped cream to roll into Lake Michigan, which has been drained and filled with hot chocolate. Then the Royal Canadian Air Force will fly overhead towing a 10-ton maraschino cherry, which will be dropped into the whipped cream for the cheering of 25,000 extras. All right, cue the mountain. Okay, 25,000 cheering extras.
Now, you want to try that on television?
Well...
You see, radio is a very special medium because it stretches the imagination.
Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
Ever feel completely down on your luck, whether it's your career or just your life? Do you look at other people and wonder, why them, not me? I'm Kate Delaney. I did it. I admit it. I've learned some valuable and priceless lessons from some of the rock stars I've interviewed over the years, like Sir Richard Branson or the late, great John Madden, and I want to share them. Want to laugh? Want to learn? Want more out of life? Then pick up a copy of my book, Deal Your Own Destiny, Increase Your Odds, Win Big, and Become Extraordinary. Get it on Amazon today.
The Tahibo Tea Club's original pure Pauti Arco Super Tea naturally builds good cells and kills bad cells. So, it's great for healthy people, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting an infection, diabetes, or cancer. To order, visit drinksupertea.com or call 818-965-9113. That's drinksupertea.com. 818-965-9113. drinksupertea.com.
All right, time to take you to the movies. So do we have a treat for you. So imagine this big break, a big movie that just opened up and I really wanted to do well. It's a horror thriller film. And the story follows a convicted serial killer who on the day he's slated for execution says he's a demon. And he goes through a psychiatric evaluation to determine if he's really mentally fit to receive that sentence. So I had a chance to catch up with the star, Sean Patrick Flannery. Here's that combo. What a pleasure to welcome to the show, Sean Patrick Flannery. I already like him already. Come on. I like his name. Plus, I've seen him on Young and the Restless, The Boys, a ton of different roles that he's played over the years. So he's quite an accomplished actor, and now he plays the lead role in Nefarious. And let me tell you, I saw the previews for it, and I think this movie is going to be a home run. In fact, I'm running out to see it. That's how excited I am about it. And again, we're thrilled to have him on. So, Sean, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Let's talk about this role and how it came about and what it was like really embracing this, let's face it, kind of a dark character, needless to say.
Well, it came about, I'd initially done a film with Chuck and Carrie, the writers and directors, in 2004. And at the culmination of that film, I told them, I loved working with you guys and I would do a Fruit Loops commercial with y'all. Well, a year and a half ago, they called me and they said, Flannery, we got a Fruit Loops commercial. And I said, let's go do it. And they said, whoa, hang on. Let us send you the script. You tell us if you want to do it. I read the script. It is one of the most surgically crafted scripts I've ever read in my life. And I called them back and I said, absolutely, I'm in. And they said, well, which role do you want to play? And I said, well, I'd love to play Nefarious. And they said, thank God. Yes. And we went and we made it. I've never read a script like this that moved me that much, that was that well crafted. It's very rare for me to have an opportunity to do a character like this. I mean, these are the roles that A-list actors get. And I know I've made a career out of doing movies that nobody sees. So the fact that it landed in my lap is kind of, you know, palms up.
So you get it, you love it, you read it, you're ready to roll. How do you prepare for a role like Nefarious?
You know, the wonderful thing about preparation for a wonderful script is the more well-written a script is, the less preparation is required. My preparation was contained between fade in and fade out, and that's not an over-exaggeration. I didn't take any of the character home with me. That character died on the word cut and was created on the word action. And like I said, sometimes you need to go outside to fill in the gaps in a script. This script had no gaps, in my opinion. I simply sat down in a chair and I said the words.
And boy, and what a tribute that is to the script, again, that you read. So tell me about the other actors in it, because it seemed like, and again, this is just basing on what I've seen, that there was some real chemistry there.
Well, I got to tell you, one of my biggest concerns in doing this film, and I told Chuck and Carrie this, I said, who's going to be sitting on the other side of the table? Because, I mean, it's largely a what they call a two-hander. And when they suggested Jordan Belfi, and I did my research on him, you know, they cast him. I would not want to do this film with anyone else on the other side of the table than Jordan. I thought he was magnificent in this role. He was a wonderful dance partner, professional, punctual. He knew everything top to bottom. It was an effortless experience with him. I can't imagine doing it with anybody else.
Yeah. So when you do this, you're excited about it, and here's the big day. What's that like for you? Is there any butterflies? I mean, you're a pro, but this is a huge role, like you said, for you. Are you excited to see how this does?
That's understatement of the year. Am I excited? You know, I've made a career out of doing movies that nobody sees. So, I mean, the fact that this is coming to theaters across the country is kind of crazy. It's neat for me and my wife and my family to see the posters at movie theaters. It's a big deal. Like I said, I hope people enjoy it. I hope people go to see it. And I hope when they do that they enjoy it. This is why you get into the business, movies like this. And I'm honored, and it is a true privilege. And so I look forward to the coming weeks and see if people actually received it.
And doing this, where it's like a psychological thriller, and your character's in prison, and you said you have to trust Jordan because it's that two-hander, and you're going back and forth, and there's so much dialogue. And again, you're a pro, but there's a lot of dialogue in this for you, and you're really counting on that relationship. So it had to be gratifying to be able to pull this off, right?
Well, there was a heavy word count. There really was. But, you know, I've never been afraid of heavy lifting. I love a challenge, and this role was a challenge for me. But that's why I packed up my car after college and I drove out to L.A. because I hoped one day in my career I would get a role like this. So I think, you know, I'm not saying I succeeded or I failed, but I certainly had been preparing a long time, you know, for a fastball over home plate. And I swung as hard as I could, and we'll see where the ball lands.
Yeah, since you got in that car and you drove out and decided you were going to do the acting thing, do you feel fortunate in some of the roles that you have gotten and the kind of career you've had? Because you have a big body of work.
Let me tell you, I haven't had to get a real job in 30 years. I mean, it's not lost on me. I've had real jobs. I changed the deep fat fryer at Church's Fried Chicken. I moved pianos for Atlas Van Lines. I literally dug ditches. I put culverts under driveways. The fact that I've been gainfully employed and been able to feed my family and house my family while playing make-believe and pretend on movie sets, it's not lost on me. I mean, I am incredibly blessed. I'm incredibly grateful. And I hope it doesn't stop.
I love it. Great to spend some time with you. Nefarious, it opens wide. Like you said, it's in theaters across the country. We do these movie reviews here on my show. People go and support Sean and support this movie. And thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you very much.
All right, what a great guy. So I want you to hear the trailer for Nefarious. Check it out.
Do you think I'm evil? Evil isn't that clinical diagnosis.
I'd like to ask about why you brought me here today.
Do you believe in demonic possession?
No.
Well, then you won't believe anything I'm about to tell you.
And give me something to make me believe you.
Okay. Let me inhabit you.
He got in your head, didn't he?
He claims he's a demon.
He's a master manipulator. By the time he's done with you, you have your head so twisted around you think you're the killer.
When you leave here today, you will have committed 3 murders.
Why would I do that?
Legionum innominis.
What are you doing?
My name is Nefariamus. Names are important. They have power. They let everyone know who we are.
All right, are you scared yet? You know, and I think of, and I mentioned that some of the things that he's been in, and he told us how lucky he was, and I really hope this hits the mark, because horror movies, of course, now just the genre in general are so popular. I've always liked them in thrillers since I was a kid, but I can remember him playing in Boondock Saints, and even the sequel, the Boondock Saints 2, All Saints Day, if you remember. Connor McManus, that's who he was in that. And a lot of people know him from the soap, and I mentioned that to him, you know, Young and the Restless, when we sat down for the conversation. But he was also in that series, The Young Indiana Jones Chronicles, and so much more. It has to be exciting, and this is an exciting time for him and for those filmmakers too as well, because they knew they had him in mind. But I love the way they said, hey, read the script, and then he gets back to him, and then boom, there you go. All right, people, go see it. Be safe, be sane, be happy.
I am a non-attorney spokesperson representing a team of lawyers who help people that have been injured or wronged. If you've been involved in a serious car, truck, or motorcycle accident, or injured at work, you have rights, and you may be entitled to money for your suffering. Don't accept an offer you get from an insurance company until you talk to a lawyer. And we represent some of the best personal injury lawyers you can find. Tough lawyers that will fight to win your case. And they're so good they stake their reputation on it by only getting paid if you win. So if you've been in a serious car, truck, or motorcycle accident, or hurt on the job, find out today for free what kind of compensation you may be entitled to. Call the legal helpline right now.
800-524-3810. 800-524-3810. 800-524-3810. That's 800-524-3810.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
USA News Update. Former President Trump's hush money trial is over for Monday, and Trump had this to say leaving the courthouse.
I got indicted. I'm the leading candidate. I'm beating Biden. I'm beating the Republicans now. I have the nomination. And this is what they try and take me off the trail for.
The prosecution called their first witness, but the trial was halted due to the Passover holiday. Pro-Palestinian protests at Columbia University have forced classes online Monday. Day 6 of demonstrations have been deemed a crisis by the school's president. Protesters demand divestment from companies profiting from Israel's alleged violations of international law and Palestinian rights. Gas prices continue to rise in the U.S., with the average price hovering around $3.67 per gallon. According to AAA, this is 4 cents higher than last week. The highest price is in California, where it's as high as $7.29 per gallon. John Schaefer, USA News.
Eating, working, living pain-free. These are things many of us take for granted. But for many adults with disabilities who are elderly or have serious medical issues, dental care is simply unaffordable. Dental Lifeline Network is looking for dentists who can change this. DLN is asking dentists and their teams to volunteer to just see one of the many patients in need. You can literally change a life. When you volunteer with DLN's donated dental services program to C1, you treat a pre-qualified patient in your office at your convenience. We handle the details so you can focus on the care. Lack of dental care can lead to the inability to have life-saving surgery, eat, or contribute to our community. If you are a dentist or know a dentist, please share this message. Will you see one? Visit willyouseeone.org to help change one life in your community today.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. There's no reason why you shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there. And I'm going to give you a free copy of my lecture that tells you exactly how to do it. In fact, after you've lived a long and healthy life, there should be only two documents in your medical chart, a birth certificate and a death certificate. I'm Dr. Wallach with a warning. If you have a 4-inch medical chart, if you take prescription drugs for high cholesterol, high blood pressure, arthritis, joint pains, and other health issues, the medical profession is failing you. They're using you for an ATM machine. My free lecture is going to reveal what pharmaceutical companies don't want you to know. There's been groundbreaking research and discoveries on how to effectively treat or eliminate over 900 different diseases naturally. It's all in my free lecture called Deadly Recipe. So call toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. Again, that's toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. 1-855-79-YOUNG.
Marquis, such an interesting story. Imagine if your wife comes to you and says, I want to ride the Pacific Crest Trail. That happened to him. Of course, they both were excellent when it came to riding horses and doing adventurous things in the outdoors. So we'll get to that story in just a minute. But before we do, I would be remiss not to tell you a little bit about his story. What a career he certainly has had. And I can understand why he and his wife lived an adventurous life out of doors, for sure, because of some of the things that happened being on a small ranch. And also in his career, think of Alaska and think of being in Alaska and being the first construction worker at the Valdez terminal site of the Alaska pipeline. Wow. I can think of bears. I can think of incredible wildlife, but also I can think of being scared out of my mind. I'm sure Pat wasn't. So Pat, thanks for coming on.
Well, thank you. Appreciate it.
So we do have to tell the stories. What was that like being the first construction worker at this huge site on the Alaska pipeline?
It was an adventure in itself. The site itself obviously had people working on it to prepare it, at least doing topographic surveys and all the information they needed to design the facility. But when we got there, we went to a camp that was in the town of Valdez, a trailer camp. And the first day of work, they took us by bus into town and took us to the boat harbor. We got off, you know, onto a unified six-pack. That means it can carry six people. And they took us across the bay, which is several miles. So that took, 10, 15 minutes. They offloaded us onto a floating raft, basically. We put all our equipment on the raft and then put all our equipment into a rowboat, and we rowed ashore to do our first day's worth of work. Now, this is a $1 billion contract. They had all the money in the world, and yet we're rowing ashore. It was amazing, to tell you the truth.
Boy, well, we can talk about it all day, but let's get to your other journey. And the book is called that, The Journey. And you talk about the Pacific Crest Trail. And how did this come about? How did Rhonda come up with this idea that she wanted to do it?
Well, you know, we've been adventurous. And several years before this, he had embarked on a trail here in Central Oregon that's called the Metolius-Wendigo Trail, which is a 150-mile trail, taking you from one mountain pass and down into the valleys and along the route parallel to the highway system and then back up to the top of the mountains. And she rode that with several friends, not me because I was working, but she did that trip, and that kind of got her started on knowing that she was capable of doing something like this. And packing, you know, to carry your own supplies and what do you carry, planning and training herself and the horse to be able to do it. So that got it started. And then we had friends that had ridden a portion of the Pacific Crest Trail through the state of Oregon, roughly 450 miles. And they had, you know, and they were close friends. And so Rhonda had the opportunity to bounce ideas off these folks and understand just really what it took in terms of planning and preparation to embark on a trip of this nature. You know, you have anywhere from 4 to 7 days at times that you're totally off any system at all other than the trail, and it's totally up to you, you know, to prepare yourself and to have all the food and fodder and horse supplies and everything you need to stay safe and have a good time.
You know, and this is rugged and treacherous. Were you worried? I mean, you did part of it. Were you worried about her being out there by herself?
You know, that's part of life. We separate all the time. You know, you could get hurt driving to work the next day. So, you know, yes, I worried about her and had those concerns, but I also had a lot of faith in her inner abilities to cope with most anything. And that was pretty much proven on her trip on the trail. She had several circumstances that took every bit of knowledge and wit and perseverance and courage to get her through it.
Yeah. And she rode for 1,500 miles, which is amazing. You told me 15 miles a day for basically 100 days. And you were there for part of it. When you could be there, you were there. What was it like being on the horse, being with her when you could do it? And what kind of things, what kind of nature did you see? It had to be beautiful.
Oh, yes, it certainly was, although I didn't go on the most difficult portions. I have the malady of being afraid of heights to some extent. So, you know, when we were out there riding together, she said, just look at the butt of the horse in front of you and don't look down. So it sometimes is that kind of a treacherous trail where you might, if you went off the trail, you might have 500 feet to go downhill in a rolling fashion, not walking. So I enjoyed it thoroughly and riding with her. I wish I could have gone on more of the trip, but, you know, we took advantage of this opportunity to be together, and, you know, we knew we were getting close to the end, and it was just a really fun time to be together, even though, you know, the first 2 days were in rain. And, you know, finding a campsite and putting your horses up and making sure they're secure and all those things, getting your tent and facilities put up and weathering the storm is part of that trip.
And it's interesting in deciding to do that trip. I mean, you both knew how to handle horses. You loved to, and you were adventurous, as I said, and you liked horseback riding as a couple, right?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Our house, I mean, our life has been centered on, you know, our relationships with the horses, and you know, gladly so. And even though they're sometimes problematic, it's been a wonderful life to be able to have that relationship. Horses are a unique animal, and as you would probably find if you got online and studied it a little bit, there's a lot of horses now being used to help people that have mental difficulties, that they can relate to a horse easier than they can people.
Yeah. What was her most difficult day on that journey?
Well, there were several, but one was the day that she was riding on the trail above Lake Tahoe through the top of the ridges, and the horse, basically she had an accident with the horse. The horse got caught on some brush and backed up and consequently went off the trail and rolled down the hill. And she had to rescue the horse and get him back on his feet, get all the supplies back on him, and he was injured severely. And from then she had to figure out, you know, communication with me to say, I've got to come off the trail. And luckily, she had a hiker there that had witnessed all of this, and he helped her accomplish what needed to be done in order for her to get back down to civilization, and we could tend to the horse's problems that he had as through his injuries. So that was probably one of the most difficult times for her. Not only did she have to do all of that, the horse also trampled her on the way back up on to the trail, and she separated her collarbone from her sternum.
Ugh.
And so she came out riding the horse for 10 miles while injured herself, and we had to take her to the hospital that night.
Wow. In writing that story and then writing all the wonderful things that happened and just what a determination and bravery and courage and everything that's mixed in with that, how fun was this for you to put pen to paper, so to speak, and come up with the journey?
You know, when she first asked me, I wasn't all that hot to do it. I knew how troublesome it was going to be in terms of the logistics of just providing the food and transportation to move our crew, basically, from one spot to the other. But after a while, I got to thinking about it, and I said, well, you know, it's going to be an adventure. Why not do it? And obviously, it was an adventure. I loved meeting so many people along the trail when I was by myself and Rhonda was up on the mountains. And I'd stop over and chat with the nearest person who might be camping or just walking or whatever they might be doing, you know. And sometimes it was store owners, sometimes it was forestry people. But there was always an occasion for me to, you know, be social and just enjoyed it thoroughly.
What do you hope people, Pat, take away from reading your book, The Journey, which you can get on Amazon or Barnes & Noble?
Well, you know, I had some people write me after they'd read the book, and I'm going to just quote this because they have a lot of meaning to me. These were testimonials from people that had been through the book. One was, loved the book, loved your style of writing. Can't say enough good things about it. Another one, a delightful story of grit, determination, and labor of love. And let's see, the last one was from somebody I'd never known, and he had read the book and sent me a letter. It said, through humor, pathos, and clarity, the author takes readers on an unforgettable journey where they can experience the heartbreak, trials, and triumphs of this extreme adventure riding the PCT. It's a fascinating read, one that I found hard to put down until the journey's end.
Perfect place to end this. Pat, thank you so much for coming on.
All right. Thank you, Kate. I appreciate it very much.
Hi, this is Kate Delaney. I am truly amazed by this audience. Many of you have been reaching out to me to ask more on what I call the No Drone Zone. How do you find out about the show or listen to podcasts or guests or even my books? So here we go. Go to katedelaneyradio.com for more on what's shaking in my orbit. To reach me, simply hit the contact tab and send an email. Behind the scenes photos, great video, travels, the dog. Yeah, that's Guinness. He is the mascot. Go to Kate Delaney fan page on Facebook, Kate Delaney fan page on Facebook, or hit me up on Twitter at Kate S. Delaney. at Kate S. Delaney. For any of my books, including Deal Your Own Destiny, Amazon simply is the easiest. Thanks for listening as we talk about what's happening in my backyard and yours and how it affects us. We throw in laughs, cheap movie reviews, the man cave, and authors with some interesting stories to tell. If you've already forgotten everything I've just said, just go to katedelaneyradio.com.
Who listens to radio at night? EMTs, truck drivers, law enforcement, and many other hardworking people just like you, buying products and services from companies just like yours. Many companies owe their success to radio. It's the engaging medium. Call 877-996-4327 or email advertise@gcnlive.com. That's advertise@gcnlive.com.
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read a few. After taking Extendivite for about 6 months, I've noticed improvement on the numbness of my hands and wrists from the carpal tunnel syndrome. I will continue to buy product. This formula is very powerful. I am feeling much better. My heart rate and blood pressure has stabilized. My lower edema has reduced, and lower leg pain due to blood clots has disappeared. This product has relieved what appears to be an angina problem, pain in the chest after climbing stairs and short on breath. I'm quite happy about it. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
The final phase of extermination is set to commence now. And as population die-off becomes evident, you know it is the time of punishment in all that is written. The cover for mass die-off is evolution and global warming frauds, also used as false proof of their Christ. They are from the lines that were disinherited 2,000 years ago. Now they claim to be his Christ based upon blood type, DNA, and long lifespan. Go to unveilingthem.com. That's UNVEILING them.com.
So, you know when you say you're going to do something like, I don't know, climb Mount Kilimanjaro, and people look at you like, yeah, right, you're going to do that? I'm going to introduce you to someone that is so cool, who actually follows through and does those things. If she says it, I think she absolutely is going to do it. So Anne Bonny is a change expert and a keynote speaker. And more importantly, I think she does move mountains. And one of the things that she says is change is the only constant. And what is it about us where we don't get off our butts and we don't like to feel uncomfortable, where we know we could train? Maybe we can't climb Kilimanjaro like she did, but we could do other steps and do other things. And she tells you how to do that, and she's done it herself. And so we're going to talk about her trip to Kilimanjaro, because I think it's awesome that she did that, and she's certainly done many other things as well. Just a quick little note on her background. How many times have you moved? She's moved at least 27 times. When she was a kid, 13 different schools, right? There's no being shy if you go to 13 different schools. So, Anne, thanks so much for hanging with us.
Oh, I'm a little uncomfortable and shy about this, Kate, but it's great to be here.
Yeah, I bet you're shy. So first of all, tell us about Kilimanjaro. How'd that come about?
I'm turning 50 next summer, and a friend of mine and I were talking about doing safari, and I was like, how about we go to Kenya and do a safari? And then another friend said, while you're down there, why don't you climb Kilimanjaro? And I passed it by my friend, and she said, yeah, that's always been a bucket list item of mine. And then, so I was always looking for things that make you uncomfortable, and so I said, yeah, let's do it.
Wow, so you make the commitment, you're going to do it, and then how do you get ready for that?
You walk a lot. I mean, the cool thing about Kilimanjaro, unlike Everest requires technical climbing skills, and there's a lot of danger and crevasses and all that stuff. Kilimanjaro is just a really hard hike. So any pedestrian who doesn't have the climbing skills can still very, very realistically do Kilimanjaro. So that was one of the motivating factors. We read a lot We talked to a lot of people who'd been up there, so we kind of got some of the tips that they wish they'd known. And then we walked a lot.
What was the most challenging aspect of this?
For me, you know, it was interesting because there were three of us that went on this trip and we each had a sort of a different challenge. Mine was going down, interestingly. Not that walking downhill was so hard, but for some reason I had set the peak in my head. And I don't know whether I thought there was some magical fairy that was going to fly me down to the bottom or what, but we got to the top and our guides were like, okay, it's time to go down. And I thought, oh crap. Now I have another 10-mile hike to get to where we sleep tonight. And that ended up being the most mentally challenging for me because I essentially set my goal for the top and that life kind of ended there, but it didn't.
What was it like when you got to the top? What was that feeling like?
First of all, it was surreal because you're a little bit oxygen deprived. You're exhausted because you started that day at 11 o'clock the night before. But you look at that sign that you've been waiting for 8 months to look at and you're like, holy crap, I'm here. Like, I did it. It's, you know, and we were all, of course, crying and our guides were worried about us. Like, why are you crying? We're like, we're so happy that we're here. And then you try to remember all the pictures you were planning to take with all, you know, with your alma mater sign and your this is 50 sign and all this. And you're trying to remember all the things you were going to do when you got there. And then the guides are trying to get you down quickly because again, you're at 19,341 feet and there's not a whole lot of air up there. So it was surreal. It was fast. It was amazing. And I got the main picture that I wanted.
and to do this whole thing, like you talk about, it's like a hard hike. How long did it take?
So we did the, what's called the Coca-Cola route or the, now I can't think of the name. But anyway, we did the 5-day route. So it was 3.5 days to the top. So we hiked every day for 3 days and then did the summit day and then a day and a half to get down. But on summit day, we started at 11 o'clock at night and didn't reach the actual summit probably 4 miles away until 8 or 9 o'clock in the morning. If it tells you how slow we were actually going and how deep it was. Yeah.
Wow. And what's it like as you're moving along on that journey? I mean, what are you seeing as you get higher and higher?
It's 11 o'clock at night. You're not seeing a darn thing. No. From the gate where we started, it was cool because you go through lots of different ecological zones. You know, you start in the rainforest where you're seeing monkeys and lots of trees and thick jungly. And then you move into the moorland where it's more scrubby. Then you move into, I think the Arctic desert is above that. So there's like very little plants. And then you get to the point where you're above the clouds, above 15,000 feet, and there's just rocks, nothing. It's like the moon. And so it was neat to go through all those phases and kind of be able to mark your progress along the way. But on summit day between 11 p.m. and sunrise, really all you could see was the lines of headlights of the other hikers in front of you. And I finally got to the point where I was like, and don't look at them because they were really far away and really steep. And to think about getting to where they were was kind of overwhelming. So I saw a lot of my feet and the dirt under my ground, under my feet.
Wow, the headlights. I mean, it's kind of, there's an analogy, I think, buried in that somewhere, because you talk about that, about discomfort. So you said to me off the air that you hunt discomfort. So that you have a thing that I think you must do, a mechanism where, hey, that's what you do. You knew that I don't want to look there because, oh my gosh, that's going to freak me out, right? And so I think for people listening, there's a good lesson in that.
Well, and that's 100% the case. You know, one of the other people that I was hiking with, at about 2 a.m, she had her hard time. And because she was looking at those headlights and she was saying, I can't go there like that. I can't do that. My body can't do that. And, I asked her, I said, can you take 10 more steps? Look down. Can you take 10 more steps? And she ended up just taking 10 steps and then taking 10 more steps and taking 10 more steps. And that's such a good thing to think about when you're in the middle of something really uncomfortable, when you're in the middle of a huge goal that feels unsurmountable. Don't look at the finish line. Don't look at where you're going because it'll get in your head. Just look down and take the next 10 steps or take the next one step. I used that when I was in the middle of the pandemic. I was like, I'm thinking too big. Shrink the bubble. Just get through the next day. And that's a great way to move through discomfort a little bit easier.
Ooh, I like that. Shrink the bubble. We're speaking with Anne Bonney. She's a change expert and a keynote speaker. And she climbed Kilimanjaro. Oh, my gosh. So you get to the bottom. You're done. You're through, so to speak. What's that celebration like?
Beer. because we didn't shower for 5 days. We were eating dehydrated hiking meals all the way up and snack bars and everything. So we had a feast of delicious fresh food and the beers, and we laughed and we looked at our pictures and we talked about the lessons. And it was then that it really hit, like, whoa, we just did that. Like, we have now been to the top of Kilimanjaro. It was hard. And we did it. And that will never go away. And that is worth all the hours of training and all the worry and the money and the, you know, discomfort all at the time to be able to say, holy crap, I did that.
So what will you and these friends do for an encore?
It's like asking somebody who just had a baby when they're going to have the next baby. What's my next? I bought a unicycle the other day. I think that's my encore, is at 49 years old learning how to ride a unicycle. I think that's my next. But, you know, my next discomfort hunting encore, I think, is a 10-day silent meditation retreat.
Ooh.
Right? Shifting the gears and looking at, okay, what have I not done? I've done a lot of physical challenges. Now I'm like, can I shut up and sit down for 10 days? I don't know.
That is tough, especially for a speaker.
I intentionally created a job where I get to paid to speak, and now I'm going to go not talk for 10 days. You can see how uncomfortable that'll be.
I love that challenge. Hunting discomfort, it's awesome. You're awesome. So if people want to know more about you, Anne Bonney, where can they go?
YourChangeSpeaker.com or AnneBonney.com if you want to just make it easy.
There you go. Anne, thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks so much for having me, Kate. Great to chat.
Hi, this is Kate Delaney. I am truly amazed by this audience. Many of you have been reaching out to me to ask more on what I call the No Drone Zone. How do you find out about the show or listen to podcasts or guests or even my books? So here we go. Go to katedelaneyradio.com for more on what's shaking in my orbit. To reach me, simply hit the contact tab and send an email. Behind the scenes photos, great video, travels, the dog, yeah, that's Guinness, he is the mascot. Go to Kate Delaney fan page on Facebook, Kate Delaney fan page on Facebook, or hit me up on Twitter @KateSDelaney. For any of my books, including Deal Your Own Destiny, Amazon simply is the easiest. Thanks for listening as we talk about what's happening in my backyard and yours and how it affects us. We throw in laughs, cheap movie reviews, the man cave, and authors with some interesting stories to tell. If you've already forgotten everything I've just said, just go to katedelaneyradio.com.